Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hey everyone, it's Jenny here. Today I am talking with Chong EJ from Focus on the Family. He is a family life educator and counselor, married to his lovely wife. They have a 4-year-old son. And also with us is Constance. She leads a work called Journey here in Singapore. And they work with people who are struggling with relational and sexual brokenness. Hi, both of you.
Hi, Jenny.
So good that you are able to join us. We really appreciate your being here. This is a subject matter that has been difficult to talk about, I think, especially for us here in an Asian society. So as we start off, I thought maybe you can help us understand what is sexual brokenness.
But this is a really new term as we are exploring as well, you know. So based on what we have been just reading and dialoguing with people about, you know, it's really our understanding is really is both a physical and in terms of human and also a spiritual level of brokenness in the area of sexuality, you know. And we realize that, you know, it's really an ongoing battle that you know, that really affects the sexual health and purity of individuals and as the church, you know. So as we talk more with individuals, with families, adults and youths as well, we realize that many have been imprisoned, crippled, and enslaved in areas such as pornography, masturbation, premarital sex, and all that. And there are implications and impacts that affects them currently in their state of life, you know. You see the outworkings, or in the later stages of their life in marriage and relationships as well.
What about you, Constance?
I think brokenness is a reference to our human condition after the fall. You know, our inability after the fall as humans chose to sin, to relate rightly to God, to relate rightly to other human beings, other created beings, and to relate rightly to ourselves. For myself, I think brokenness is mainly about broken relating. So, you know, starting from Adam and Eve, trusting the snake, trusting their own judgments instead of trusting God, and hiding from God and blaming each other. So broken relating.
Right.
And brokenness, so for me, that's our fallen human condition. So sexual brokenness for me is a subset of that brokenness.
Larger.
It's broken relating that expresses itself in sexual acting out that goes against the way God has intended and designed us to live as sexual beings. So the sexual acting out can be, you know, as EJ has talked about, it can be adultery, premarital sex, masturbation, acting out in homosexual acts, and so on.
Okay. So in other words, if there is something broken, then there's something whole before that, right?
Yep.
So when you guys are working with these people, what is this vision of sexual wholeness that you talk about or help them to come to terms with?
So in this area, we often, in the work that we do, we always reference back to God's original design of sex and sexuality. So at every different stages, or whoever comes to us for support or help, or even through our training programs and workshops that we do at Focus on the Family, we always return to that, you know, God's ordained design in terms of male and female as well.
It's the same for us, and it's the Orthodox Christian position.
And so in your work with, well, whether it's youths or adults or parents, what are some things that have turned up that have perhaps illustrated how pernicious this area can be and how difficult it is? I mean, if somebody comes to you and say, I'm struggling with managing my finances, I can't, you know, I can't budget. Or somebody says, I'm struggling with negative thoughts. Versus somebody who says, I'm struggling with this area of my life, you know, and my sexuality, either my understanding or my encounters. Do you guys have some kind of a way to say in your experience that certain forms of brokenness, as it were, seems to be a little easier to get over than other forms? What has your experience shown you?
Actually, I think sometimes, unfortunately, in society or in the church, we have this hierarchy of sins, you know, where it seems like sexual brokenness is so much bigger than other kinds of sins. But really, I mean, if we look at God, a sin is a sin. Any sin, you know, separates us from God. So in terms of that, you know, a sexually acting out in any way is not any different from, you know, behaving in a prideful and condescending way to another person.
Mm.
The consequences can be very different.
Right.
But in terms of whether or not it's something that separates us from God, I think sexual brokenness is the same as any other kind of brokenness.
Mm.
And actually, interestingly, I think people who struggle with sexual brokenness, it's such an overt sin, right? It's like in the Bible, we talk about the prostitutes mm-hmm. and the Pharisees.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prostitute action in there. It's overtly something that people feel shameful about,
mm.
sinful. And often that's one thing that actually makes them think, oh, it's I need God. It drives them to God
mm.
way more than perhaps Pharisee attitudes.
Mm.
You know, so, you know, doing the right thing, but from a wrong motive. And I think that is actually a kind of brokenness that we all have,
right.
And which is even harder to look at because we can distract ourselves with good things that we do.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think just to add on to what Constance has mentioned, I fully agree. And from the works that I've been doing both in the ministry and in the church and also at Focus on the Family, we realize that because people have seemed to have, you know, put the whole notion of sexual brokenness, you know, or sexual sins, you know, at such a high level, you know, mm. and Constance has mentioned that, you know, that and it's resulted that people don't dare to talk about it.
Mm.
They don't dare to come out and address it, you know, whether with trusted adults or even with the church, you know, and mm. therefore, so they just keep holding it back, suppressing it. So by the time they come and really seek help, it's at that really, you know, deep end where, you know, it's mm. really hard to pull them out sometimes, or you need really, really long-term support. Or by then, it would also means that they have retracted from their own community of
right.
support and just been running away for a long while.
Mm. So I want to talk about this whole retracting from community. I can understand that it is related when in a community, something is held out as, you know, like this is a special category of sin that somehow seems a little bit more unforgivable. It's a little yeah. bit more unclean and all that.
Yeah.
So I would think that in your experience, is it consistently true that many of these people who are struggling with these issues then tend to pull back from community? So how can we as a church respond then? Or is there something, you know, like preemptive that we should be doing? What do you think?
Well, something that in my ministry that I work with, because I work closely with ranging from youths, young adults mm-hmm. to adults, married couples as well. And over the years, I think I've been very boldly and confidently daring to step out and talk about it because I've seen way too many people just retracting from the community. So I'm seeing two extremes, actually.
Right.
One is where they really retract from the community and they isolate themselves and mm-hmm. they further get... you know, they fall into this trap of being enslaved by condemnation and all the more they don't want to step out. And then there's the other spectrum of the end where they got so used to it, they actually glamorize it. You know,
right.
they're actually doing such acts or, you know, falling into sin. It's like, it's a cool thing.
Mm.
And that. So I'm getting more and more bold on my end. You know, as a leader, I felt that, you know, it's important. You need to step out and address these issues
mm-hmm.
and to talk about it. You know, and come back to what does the Word of God says, you know,
right.
Again, we mentioned earlier about original design and how, and coupled with that, of course, practical ways, you know, that as a family or as a support community that we can help them, you know,
mm.
yeah.
Okay. So that's very interesting that you mentioned these two tendencies that we have. Yeah. The hiding tendency or the, hey, you know, I'm cool with this, so it's just part of who I am and the glamorizing. We definitely can see this happening around us. What about for you, Constance?
I think the shame that you talked about and the shame that you talked about, EJ, I think it's really real. It's very mm. real. And I think in churches and, you know, when we're walking with people who, whoever it is, I think being... recognizing that shame is something that keeps people silent. It's a prison
mm.
that keeps people from saying... things, and it's I think it's the reason why the Bible talks about confessing your
yes.
sins, you know, especially to each other so that you may be healed.
Mm.
Because when we bring the sin out into the light, there is something so powerful about that. You
That's
know,
right.
You know, mm. it helps us to realize that we're not the only one sinning. And
yeah.
Similar to a point that you made as well, EJ, I think if people in the church, leaders, would model that kind of a transparency, talking about their struggles instead of I have overcome and I'm victorious.
Right.
But actually saying I'm still struggling or I have struggled and I continue to struggle in other ways, it will lessen the level of shame and actually acknowledging and identifying that there is that shame. It's going to keep you guys locked up. But then as a leader, modeling that we can talk, we can speak out of that shame can actually really, I think, can help.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, Constance, actually applies to every area. Just being authentic and transparent that the faith journey is a journey. And it's an ongoing struggle. We all have wounds and scars from the battle and all that. But I do think, though, that this particular aspect, even though we don't believe in a hierarchy of sins and all that, there's something special about the human sexuality that's why we need specialized ministries, as it were, like yours. Could you speak more into that? What you have experienced in your ministry? What has really helped people overcome this shame, for example?
Well, I is it okay if I first comment on something you said?
Sure, yeah.
Which is, I think sex is such a powerful, beautiful gift, right, that God has given within the marriage, you know. And it is the most profound way human beings can connect, at the most intimate ways of connecting.
Yeah.
And because we are created gendered beings, none of us are created without gender. So, I mean, it's not surprising that, you know, sexual acting out can have such a huge pull on people.
Because it's just so involving, right?
Involving the whole human being, and because it touches us at such a deep level.
So what have you found that, precisely because of that, so it comes very laden with shame when we, when a person believes that what they're doing is wrong in the eyes of God. So in your work, when you have journeyed with these people, obviously this shame thing is a huge barrier that they have to cross before they can be healed as well. What has helped them emerge from that place of wanting to be secret, wanting to hide, and, you know, just being free from that shame that is attached to this particular dimension of life?
I think just speaking very specifically to my own experiences in journey, because what we do is we pray in small groups for men or women that are struggling in various kind of issues. It doesn't have to be sexual brokenness. And I think when we give people space to really bring all of their stuff before God, and we model that to them, that, you know, hey, we can talk, we can bring to God both our wounds and the ways in which we have wounded others. And as they realize that, oh, I can talk about all this before God, I think that the shame lessens. Because, you know, it's interesting how sometimes, even in small groups or so on, you know, you can have sharing, you know, and people can talk about stuff. But once they start praying, it's a different kind of prayer. It's like, thank you, God, for something. Please help me to be a better person. And it's like, oh, wait, what happened to all the pain and that you were talking about just now? But somehow when we move into prayer, we're not actually, maybe we feel shy to bring it. Maybe we're not so sure how God's going to feel. We feel like we need to fix it. So we need to say, God, please help me to be a better person, instead of, God, I messed up. You know, so I wonder, so what we do in the ministry is we just really help people to just be honest in their prayers. Yeah. Like, just, you know.
And that's really powerful, creating that sense of safety for people then to articulate what is really going on inside. And I mean, the whole book of Psalms in the Bible is really about that. I mean, the Psalms are like, I'm crying out, I wish my you know, please zap my enemy. It's just very raw stuff, right? You know, but as you are describing that, the image that comes back to me is the Garden of Eden sin. Since we talk about original design, how it's beautiful, but precisely when Adam and Eve sinned, right, they were really afraid of God. They were hiding from Him. And what is amazing is, God didn't turn away from them. God not only sought them out, gave them space. God says, what's up, you know? What has happened? Gave them a chance to tell me what's gone on. Didn't prejudge them. You know, actually God created their safe space for them. And then not only that, God came near and then covered them, covered their shame. So that's exactly, you know, I think that is such a powerful image of what God wants to do for us. And I'm so glad to hear that journey is doing that for people as they come with whatever they are grappling with and struggling with, because just being honest before God. God is light, and we just have to come into that place of light with Him.
Yeah. And if I can just add one more point, this is not something that we can transmit theologically, you know, to people.
Yeah.
You know, we can tell them, you know, God is not ashamed of you, or like God will still accept you even though you have sinned. But what transmits to them really is personally, the leaders, the people who volunteer in our ministry, they themselves, myself as well, you know, having experienced God meeting us in our sins and God just covering our shame. And it's just like as we relate to people, that you know, we just, that I guess the Spirit helps to bring this across, you know, because it must be an experience of God's safety for people to be willing to open up.
Yeah,
and I just want to chip in at this point. I thought it was so interesting. I guess it's probably divine, because in this season, I was also walking through with a bunch of young people, young adults, you know, going through healing in this area of brokenness and sexuality. And they were just telling me, you know, some of the challenges that they are facing from allowing them to step out and to have this safe space that Jenny were talking about, you know.
Yes.
So it is actually like a gap in between the pulpit preaching, you know, when we always say that, you know, hate the sin, but you love the sinner. We heard that so many times, you know.
How does that work, man? I don't know how that works. Yeah.
And so their struggle is mainly, that is the concept, that is the theory, the theology that they're hearing. But when it actualizes in in your care group, in your cell group, in the community, they struggle, because not many people are able to do that, to accept them without judgment. But people just keep bringing that lingo, that jargon, and keep. So they said the more you use that phrase, it becomes very judgmental,
right?
You know, and they, most of them realize that coming together with that statement, it seems like, you know, change is like overnight, you know. But when actually those of us who go through recovery from sexual brokenness, it's not. It's a journey, and sometimes it's a lifetime of journey. You just keep battling and battling and and battling, you know. Yeah. And I've been journeying with some of these cases, and it's been years, you know. And the victory is sometimes it's like when you don't give in, that is the victory.
Yep,
you know, it's like just taking that, even if it's like three step forward, two step backwards, but just by gaining that one step, that is the daily victory that they have. So I think as leaders, a lot of times it's not placing that judgment, not trying to force like what is a particular KPI you're trying to see.
What's the particular outcome? Right?
Yeah.
You know, like you should just like get happily married and just get on with life. Yeah. But I at the same time, I realize this is just the pressure we have in our society. That's why not just this issue, but discipleship in general is such a challenge for us here in the busy city. You know, we have so little time to really slow down and get to know ourselves, create a safe space for ourselves, much less create safe spaces for each other. And there is God. God is just this big space that is completely safe waiting for us, but we're not availing ourselves and not bringing each other into the presence of God enough, right? So yeah, so the work that you guys are doing is so important, just coming alongside the church and helping to keep reformed, educate and reform and just mature the church in this area. So really appreciate what you do. I also want to ask EJ about this research that Focus commissioned some time back called the Whole Life Inventory. Tell us a bit about that.
So we started this back in formulating this somewhere in 2015. So we were curious to really find, because we've heard so much and there were so many conferences and so much conversations in the church about this area of sex and sexuality and brokenness. So we wanted really to find the state of the affairs that's in the church. So we actually went on board and went to many different churches to talk about this survey that we planned. And we thank God that many churches came on board. So over the last like 3 years, between 2016 to 2018, we actually have close to about 10,000 people taking part in this survey, more than 30 churches that have come on board. And the results have been, some results have come out very interesting results that we have seen. For example, in the area of sexual wholeness in a sense, you know, the common response is that the sexual issues that commonly the church members face are in the area of masturbation and pornography. And almost those who took this survey, you know, anonymously,
yeah.
They do admit that it was in their teenage days that they were exposed.
Yep.
Anecdotally, I can tell you, it's much younger, honestly, in the primary.
Well, especially with smartphones these days, right? That's just easy
media
access.
And technology right now.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more with the word for parents. But yeah, let continue, please.
Yeah, so one of the most surprising results that came out to us was that when we did an attitudinal survey, so asking the parents what are their views, you know, so many parents expressed that, yes, it's important. I think almost 80% expressed that it's important that parents should be on the first line of education efforts to teach their kids about sex and sexuality, you know, God's original design, and so forth and so on. But when you ask the kids, how many of them really do receive that first line of education from parents? That's only 20%.
Oh, wow.
So where did that 60% go to? Okay. You know, friends, internet, so forth and so on. Yeah,
schools. Yeah.
Schools.
Yeah, so I mean, that this is just real. It's easy for us to talk the talk, but so hard to walk the talk.
Yeah.
And it's, again, you know, part of just this very busy lifestyle that we really need to be very wary of in Singapore. We're just so swept up by all the demands. Yeah. So your survey has shown that Christians aren't particularly immune from these challenges.
No.
Which for some people might be a bit discouraging to know. I don't know. I mean, for others it's very enlightening, yet for others it's very shocking and startling. I remember in my own church, we were reviewing these results, and we are a very small family church. We're literally, you know, I mean, how many teenagers are there in our church? You know, I mean, you know, let's say like 60% of the teenagers, that's like six out of the 10 of them who are there, kind of thing, you know. And it was startling to us, you know, but we are glad that the survey was anonymous. People were able to give honest answers. But therefore, the fact that Christians themselves are not immune from this difficulties and dangers, as it were, what does it tell us? And what does it tell us we need to do?
We need to pray. Yeah, really. It's really been true, because I mean, the word of God does remind us again, this battle is really against the principalities,
right?
You know, not against flesh and blood, you know. And I think we are facing a major challenge right now. I so-called specialize in the area of media and technology, and I find that that kind of exposure has brought traditional challenges that we face. Sexual brokenness is just one area. It's just magnified every single traditional issues. And whenever we think about sexual brokenness, the issues that men and women are struggling with, we tend to think of just pornography.
Yeah.
But it's actually beyond that. I mean, the kind of dressing, the kind of advertisements that are coming out, the daily images that are flashing across our minds, you know, and we are trying to deal with this from the weakness of the flesh. We have no immunity in a sense, apart from just really tapping onto God, you know, returning back to Him, returning and what Constance has mentioned, returning back to prayer, you know, prayer in a community, constantly confessing to one another our struggles, our battles. This battle cannot be won by an individual. It has to be battled as a church, as a community.
Right. Thanks for pointing that out. So it's not as if we don't have ways to resist. As the Bible tells us, we can resist and we can flee and all that. And if you resist the devil, the devil will flee from you. But I think we have weakened immune systems because we have not exercised.
Yeah.
We are flabby spiritually. And one of it, which is we are not accessing a very powerful resource we have, which is prayer, personal prayer, family prayer, corporate prayer. And then this other whole dimension we talked about, confession. Talk about your sin before it gets worse, right? I mean, you know, start when the problem is small. I mean, if your kid is lying to you, you would want to deal with it before she starts lying. The lies get bigger and bigger and darker and darker. Yeah. What about you, Constance? What are your insights on this?
I think we need Jesus. Okay, that sounds like such a modern answer, but it's true,
yes,
right?
We need Jesus,
yeah, we really do. I mean, in a sense, this is an age-old issue. I mean, I don't think any empire, any society from
it's not like new.
Ancient times till now have not struggled with this. It has always been an issue, right? It's about really our hearts, our wayward hearts. But on the other hand, I think modern society and unfortunately in the church, you know, we're not that good at giving a vision of the good. So we say no. You know, no to premarital sex, no to adultery. But then what are we saying?
What can
that's
we say
good?
Yes to, right?
Yes, you know. Yeah. I mean, the vision of how good the body was created, you know, the vision of how good marriage is. You know, we need to talk about the good. If not, there's nothing to turn away from. It's just don't. And you know, like kids, right? When you tell them don't, then they get more fascinated. There's nothing that people can turn to, you see, instead of running away from.
Yeah.
And I think
actually, your comment reminds me of how previously in the church, high art was produced in the church, you know?
Mm.
So, I mean, you have naked statues and all that. Nowadays, we snigger when we see them. But back then, it was art and it was meant to display the glory of God in a human form, for example. So maybe there's a need for us in the church to, you know, to reclaim some of these things, because especially images are really powerful. You can't unsee what you've seen. You know, it's imprinted in your brain. So if parents are not careful with this, being gatekeepers of what their children are seeing and consuming online, and then if we don't have, like you said, we don't have alternative things to say, hey, this is beautiful, this is winsome, this is wholesome, this is good, this is holy, this is sacred, then yeah. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, eh?
But hope too.
Yeah, we should get busy on it then. Okay, so I do want to ask the two of you, since you work so closely with these people, and every single one of these people belong to a family, belong to a community. What would you say to the family members? We have talked about the church community a bit. I mean, what would you say if someone is struggling, if it's a teenager, what advice would you give the parents? And if it's an adult, what would you give the spouse or the rest of the family members, so that, you know, if they're all in the Lord, how can they journey with this person? What would help?
I would say it's never too late.
Mm.
It's never too late for God to bring healing in our lives and to actually meet us at those areas of need. Even though, and I think, you know, yeah, parents do play a very important part in like the kids' growth and so on. But it doesn't mean that just because we've had, in some cases, for some people, tragically, you know, their parents have done things to them that has affected them in very bad ways. It doesn't mean that God cannot bring healing afterwards too. You know, as Joel 2 talks about how the years that the locusts have eaten, God can even replace that. I think that there is, it's never too late. It's never, I think that there may be people out there who feel, you know, I'm stuck. That's my identity. I'm a porn addict. I cannot change. Or I'm stuck. I'm just broken. I've been hurt and wounded too much.
Right.
I just can't, you know, I'm broken. I'm just like, God would give up on me. But that's not true.
But precisely that's how they would, and how they might be feeling, and also how that might be reinforced by the enemy, of course. I mean,
exactly.
The devil will just keep reminding you of all the stuff you've done wrong. Then the community, therefore, must hold out hope for them.
Yes.
So we're saying. Okay. So what's some practical ways? I mean, not just sending them Bible verses all the time on WhatsApp, I'm sure. Like, how would you... EJ, feel free to jump in. Yeah.
My thought is that, and these are things that I've been doing with the community that I work with, you know, just really, and I always encourage them, the members, really to be accepting. Don't look upon those who struggle, especially, you know, in the area of sexuality, you know, don't treat them like aliens, you know.
Right.
And I always applaud them for being open to share, you know, those who struggle, because they never know, because sometimes when they share, they are actually encouraging the others who are struggling to share as well.
Yeah.
Because those sometimes who judge them, they are also struggling.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so don't look upon them as aliens, you know, affirm them, encourage them, you know, and in our own daily actions, you know, really love them. You know, I don't think it's just loving by the moment, but loving consistently. Let your, let the love of God through our lives be really evident, you know, meeting them up, you know, encouraging. So all these things shouldn't be like just, oh, because we highlighted an issue, so now for the next 3 weeks, you know, it's another programming kind of basis. And you see, we
sub them out to this program.
Yeah, we love programs, you know. I mean, honestly, we love programs, you know.
Yes,
but
we do.
Some of these recovery and support, you know, is more than a program. It has to be a lifestyle, consistently journeying with them, accepting them, loving them, you know. Just because they fall in the area of sexuality doesn't mean that we don't love them anymore, or we love them in a different way, you know, but love them with the love of God, because they are also struggling, and we all know the perfect love of God casts out all fears, and that, and love them genuinely, you know. So something that I've been doing all this, and I'm still learning and I'm still growing, that love has to be practical, you know.
Right.
So just be with them whenever they struggle. They call me in the middle of the night or whatever, and then they're battling certain thoughts, you know. Sometimes if I'm available, I'll go down, I'll be with them, I'll travel down, you know. If not, I'll be on the phone, I'll be praying together with them, you know. So some, and when they look back on hindsight, they always say those were the critical moments where you know, God's love shone through this person, this brother, this sister, and that really helped.
Yeah, those were the life-saving moments.
Yeah.
It? Yeah, can really turn a corner. And I like what you say about just loving them, because sometimes we just make an issue so big that the whole thing just eclipses everything, you know. I mean, the person is much more interesting than that. I mean, the person still has a life, still has ambition, still has strength, still has quirks, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's just... the person is still my son or my daughter or my friend or my relative or whoever, or brother or sister in Christ. I mean, that doesn't change, right?
Yeah.
So why can't we just continue the relationship? I mean, honestly, if I one day tell you that I have a real big problem with pride, and who doesn't have a problem with pride, right? And honestly, pride is not something that you put me through a program, I would ever recover from it. So, but you still, you know, we still hang out. And you don't know, secretly I'm judging you all the time, but secretly we're judging each other all the time. But I mean, you know, so life is much larger than the struggles we have, right? Yeah.
I think what you said just now, EJ, like the community coming around to help people who are struggling, whatever they're struggling with, to realize that, you know, the journey of actually, you know, moving out of whatever that you're struggling with and actually growing in health is a journey of a lifetime.
Right.
And not expecting them, you mean you're still sinning, you know, after like 3 months or so on, you know. Like really having that expectation that this is a lifelong process, we're going to continue to grow with you and move with you, and all of us are growing and you know, seeking God in whatever areas of brokenness. That's one. And the other one that I've heard is some people have said, you know, I've shared certain things in church and it has gone into this black hole where then nobody mentioned it ever again.
Ouch, yes.
And that is also the other thing that, you know, the other extreme which I think we want to avoid. If someone has shared something with you, take it very seriously. It's such a privilege. The person has risked so much perhaps to share, you know, so honor the person sharing, ask God what to do next, but don't just not do anything or just pretend that if he doesn't come back again, then the problem has gone away.
Okay.
Which I think we might secretly hope for that because we don't know what to do, but then...
This whole thing about not knowing what to do is actually very common. I mean, most of us, sometimes we just don't know what to do. I mean, if somebody tells me their kid is a gaming addict, most of us also don't know what to do, you know, and our first thought would be, which specialist can I send this person to?
Outsource.
Yes.
But while there is a place, say, for specialized ministries and all that, all of us are called to be brothers and sisters and friends to one another. So if just as a general, if I don't know what to do, what can I do? There's still something I can do. What would that thing be?
Personally, I think the best thing that one person can do is to tell the person who's struggling that I don't know what to do for you.
Great.
To be honest. And say, I don't know what to do, but I'm still willing to walk with you.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not to make the person feel, the issue has come up. Okay, now I need to be outsourced. You know.
Yeah.
But just that, you know what? I don't know what I can do for you. I might make mistakes in relating to you in the future. I might say things that will totally offend you. But I still want to walk with you. I still love you. But I don't know what to do.
EJ?
I thought what Constance said is so true. You know, because I think especially in leadership, we are so wired to be on the troubleshooting and the problem-solving mode. You know, so every time a person comes and talk to us, we are expected to give like the step 1 to 10 kind of recovery model or solution. And I've made that in my young days as a leader. You know, I've labeled them.
EJ.
Oh my, I'm 40 years old. I've labeled them. You know, I remember one of the first few cases I handled, you know, I just keep trying to troubleshoot, you know, what can I change? What can I change? What can I change? You know, and the member was just honest to tell me two things. Can you stop trying to change me? And secondly was, every time we meet, can you don't talk about pornography that I've struggled with? You know, I was like, wow, you know, and he just told me the best thing you can do for me is to listen to me.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't even mind you have no solutions, but can you just listen and empathize with the struggle and pray for me. I mean, pray for strength, you know. But you need not try to solve my problems all at one go, at one time. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so just before we go, right, since we started off by talking about brokenness as the human condition, in your work so far, do you find that broken sexuality is linked particularly to certain forms of earlier experiences in life that makes somebody more vulnerable to this? Experiences in growing up, experiences in encounters with people of authority, people of the opposite gender, just whether there are perhaps certain patterns
I start off where Constance started. You know, she mentioned about brokenness comes right from that relation. It started, you know, when that broken relationship with God in the Garden of Eden, you know, and it's traced back similarly in many of the cases that we have seen, you know, broken relationships with fathers and mothers, broken relationships, traumatic relationship in their childhood days, teenage days, and between boyfriend, girlfriends and all that. Then you see that because there was no closure, there was no proper healing for them, it manifests out some of this brokenness in the later stages of their lives, you know, especially relationships between fathers and daughters. And you see that manifestation at a later age for the young lady, you know, where she's out just seeking many different relationships, you know, and boys, you know, I've seen so many cases where in recent years, especially where they stumble across their dads watching pornography, you know, and that opened another door, you know, and so when we go through ministry with them, so many of these just begin to surface, and we had to do ministry closures with them, get them to restore relationships with their parents, you know, forgiveness and all that. Yeah, so it definitely is related to back to relationships.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful for people to reflect on their past and to look at how they have been wounded and how out of that wounded state they have wounded others. But I think, I don't think it is a categorical because of this happened in the past, so it means you must struggle this.
Yeah, we can't go that route because then we will still go back to the fix-it mentality, right?
Yeah.
And I think the danger of that is that we start speculating. And if God doesn't bring us there, doesn't bring us to things in the past that has resulted in the
stuff
now.
There's no need to keep digging, right?
Digging is actually really counterproductive. And there's been some, I know that there's some people who are actually really offended. They're like, I have nothing in my past that made me act this way. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Why are we looking at the past? Let's look at what God is opening up for you now.
Right.
So I think it's important to actually just focus on what is it that, you know, that the brokenness or memory from the past.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying, Constance, because God is light and He's the truth, right? So the whole thing is about bringing people into the presence of God and just letting the truth at that point surface and dealing with that at that time. And then maybe moving on to the next stage and dealing with the next piece, whatever comes up.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's really good.
I just wanted to just add one point about the point of shame about sexual brokenness. I've actually been really surprised in some of my work how once there is a safe place, I've actually encountered many women who have actually shared about, molestation or rape that they have experienced and the shame that they have carried from that and how they feel so responsible for that happening to them. And I think so some part of shame that we carry may not be because of anything wrong we have done.
Yeah.
It may be the shame of the perpetrator that we are continuing to carry.
Mm.
And that can actually be a really huge block that can block a lot of men and women, not just women, of course, men and women from actually coming to God because they really feel like they have been damaged in some ways. I just think that I just felt like I just needed to say that.
That's also related to just things that have happened to us that break us and then make us more vulnerable to brokenness of various forms. Guys, thank you so much for being here. You have really helped us to understand this subject matter better. And I think this is a great word for us as the people of God to really understand that we have a God who loves us and who is safe. And if each one of us can encounter this God of safety, then more and more we can be safe persons and safe places for others. Thank you very much. God bless your work.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.